Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. How you feel, fellas? Hey, yeah. You're getting down. Look at him. Ha. We're gonna have a bunch of good time. We're gonna have a bunch of good time. We're gonna have a bunch of good time. We're gonna have a bunch of good time.
Let's take them up, Fred.
Everybody, welcome to the latest edition of the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com with your hosts Ricky Hampton and Michael Robinson, columnists for the African American Athlete, coming to you on a Tuesday in July. Going to go right to my co-host tonight, the jet setter, been all over the place, finally back at the crib. Man, I hope everything's going well for you, Mike. How was your vacation?
It was adventurous. Like I said, going to Canada to the sixth City of Champions. So they got that NBA championship. I saw a little paraphernalia at the CN Tower. I went past Scotia Arena, but I didn't get to really get a good shot of it. And then of course I was at the soccer match, and a lot of people don't realize this, but Toronto FC actually won the MLS championship in 2017. So, and then of course the CN Tower is next to the Blue Jays stadium, and they won the World Series in 92-93. So they have champions up there in Toronto, and this is a good time for them right now.
Yes, sir. No doubt about it. Did you get any sense of the community since Kawhi has moved on? Are they cool with that or what?
Well, you know what? I didn't see any angst. I didn't see anything being burned or anything. But I had a friend of mine that lives in Erie, actually from Pittsburgh. He was up there right before I came to the East Coast. He said that he was in a store at the Scotia, in the gift shop, and he said he was about to purchase a jersey or something like that, and then that's when the news broke that he signed with the Clippers. So that he got interviewed right there on the spot by the local TV. So he said that's when he felt like, you know, it was like a shocker, but I guess people weren't totally shocked because there was a chance he was going to leave. Unlike LeBron going through this nonsense of all kind of accusations and everything, people said, hey, you know what? You gave us a championship. We're going to deal with it and move on next year. So it's not too much angst or anything like that going on. So other than that, though,
okay.
Once again, it's a terrific international city. So anybody who hasn't been there yet, I recommend go to Toronto. And I don't work for the tourism board.
It is a great city, man. You know, being in Detroit,
yeah.
Not that far. I've been over there
right.
A couple of times. Not far from the waterfall. Gosh, what's the great waterfall
Niagara.
Over there?
Niagara
Falls.
Right.
I'm getting help from
my
people here.
And you can't leave out Buffalo. If you're going to mention Niagara Falls, you got to mention Buffalo.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Only like 30 minutes away. But, man, we're going to get right to it tonight. We got a very special guest here on the African American Athlete .com radio show that we're going to be bringing on one of America's great college basketball coaches. And, you know, Tubby Smith. And we know all about what Tubby has done throughout his 40 years coaching college basketball and helping build the life of young men from all walks of life. So it is going to be great to bring Tubby in tonight and spend a few minutes with him discussing his career.
Yeah, I agree. You know, also, when we talk about I got tennis coming up next week, of course. And, of course, our fraternity will be having their big moment in Philly. But it was ironic that I was on the elevator with Sloane Stephens, speaking of a tennis star, while we were supposedly going down to interview Josie, but Josie, for some reason, didn't come over to our interview area. So I didn't get a chance to interview him, but it was just kind of weird to see that Sloan was there. But she was there supporting her man, so there you have it.
All right. Coach Smith, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Coach, welcome to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio show with Ricky Hampton and Michael Robertson. Brother, it is an honor to have you on tonight. And before we get you going, I want to play a little something for our listeners all across the country and our international audience.
In the 60s, a boy learned to love the game of basketball by shooting at a bushel basket nailed to a corn house. He was one of 17 children, the son of Parthenia and Guffrey Smith. His dad, Guffrey, was a devoted Methodist and shared with his kids some values for life. It doesn't cost anything to treat people right. And if you give your word to someone, you should keep it, because your word is your bond. At High Point University, values are important. After all, HPU is a God, family, and country institution. So when Guffrey saw recruitment materials from a Methodist college in North Carolina, he thought his son should pay attention. Then High Point College offered his son a full scholarship. That's when Guffrey offered a simple directive to his son: you're going to High Point. Little did Guffrey know how prophetic those words would become. His son, Orlando Tubby Smith, would go on to earn a reputation for being a hard worker, a great friend, and a masterful leader. As a freshman at High Point in 1969, Tubby stood 6'3" and played wide open. He started all 4 years, became a team captain, and averaged 15 points during his four-year career. He earned all-conference honors as a senior and graduated in 1973 with a degree in health and physical education. Today, he is the school's seventh all-time leading scorer with 1,589 career points. And while Tubby found High Point a friendly place, he was homesick at first. Calling to tell his dad about his loneliness, Guffrey was unfazed by Tubby's subtle request to leave and told him, "Boy, you can't come home. Your bed has already been taken." Soon enough, Tubby's experience at High Point transcended fast breaks and foul shots to center on friendships. Not only did High Point help Tubby hone his love of the game, it's also where he discovered the love of his life, Donna. Donna Walls from Richmond, Virginia, was High Point's first African-American homecoming queen. After college, they married and went on to have an extraordinary family of four children: a daughter, Trish, and three sons, Orlando, Gigi, Saul, and Brian. Tubby's understanding of teamwork reaches far beyond basketball.
And one of those MVPs is my wife, Donna, who I met here at High Point. She's been with me on this journey, and it's been a good journey. It's been a fun journey, and I'm grateful for her and for my family.
Tubby's a winner, not only in life, but also as a coach. His accolades are many. He's been named National Coach of the Year three times. He won a national title with Kentucky in 1998. He's been one of only two coaches all time to take five different schools to the NCAA tournament. He helped coach the USA Olympic basketball team to a gold medal. He coached 13 NBA draft picks, and he's received the John R. Wooden Legends of Coaching Award. Make no mistake about this: Tubby Smith is a transformational coach.
Ladies and gentlemen,
wow!
Great Tubby Smith, head coach of High Point University. Tubby, welcome.
Thank you, and good evening.
Hey, I wanted to play that, Tubby, because everybody knows about what you have accomplished in your storied coaching career. But, man, I think it's so important to let people know where you started from, because I get the feeling that so much of that carries you on today.
Well, it's important that family and your background shapes all of us, no matter what profession or what we're doing. But then again, the roots that my dad, I grew up on a farm, and, you know, he used to tell us, son, you can't, you know, that term you hear about, you can't rush Mother Nature. taught you the value of discipline, patience, because you can't rush that that crop. You got to nurture it. You got to cultivate. You have to do all those things to make sure that it grows. You got to feed the hogs, feed the chickens, and everything else, or you're not going to eat.
So Tubby, I have a question for you. You had a big family, and as you said, you lived on a farm. Now you go away to college, you get your independence. What exactly made you homesick? Did you really want to go back to, that large family and not really have any room to maneuver around? So what really made you homesick?
Well, when you're 17, 18 years old, and you go away from home for the first time after being around all my sisters and brothers, and most of us kind of stayed in the Southern Maryland, D.C., Baltimore, Northern Virginia area. But I was
right.
I was happy that my dad, sort of forced me to stay there. It was just that, coming to High Point University in 1969, there were only three African Americans or three blacks on campus, and two of us were basketball players. So,
wow.
So now, those were turbulent times.
Right.
The civil rights movement. There's all types of things happening. Martin Luther King was just assassinated. So I'm down here. I'm thinking, woo. But my dad said, son, did somebody do something to you? No, sir. Did somebody, they still feeding you? They still housing you? Because he was an ex-military. He fought in World War II, was wounded. And he said, well, listen, son, you better stay there because there's no room for you here. He said, but you can always join the Army, like he did. And but again, he was a wounded World War II veteran. Was wounded in 1943 in Sicily and came home to start raising a family. That's what, again, it was just a different place, a different time. I always wanted to go to University of Maryland. And I actually signed to go to University of Maryland out of high school because most kids grow up, like if they grow up in Detroit or in Michigan, they want to go to Michigan or Michigan State. See what I mean? But there was a coaching change there at the time, and I ended up going to High Point College. You asked me that question. It was just a different time.
Right.
I'm glad I stayed.
Yeah.
it's worked out pretty well for you, Tubby. And I'm sure, again, as a young black man on the campus, one of only two, when you first started there with all that stuff going on, does that experience give you perspective as you deal with young men today, in this whole new era, whole new environment when social media, all those things, the politics that are so much in play now today, does that help you in navigating all of that?
Oh, absolutely. You learn from every experience that you've ever had, and what I was taught growing up, again, being able to judge people as Martin Luther King by the content of their character. And I had some wonderful relationships that we developed here. Just for instance, the president here, Nito Cobain, who hired me to lead this program, High Point University Purple Panthers at this time, was in school with me here at High Point. I didn't know him, but he was he said he was a foreign student, but now they call international students from Lebanon.
Okay.
So he was a young person trying to find his way also. Even though we didn't know each other in college, we became friends across over the years. And the relationships that I developed with, whether it's white or black players, I still stay in touch with all of my, most of my teammates and a lot of folks and we've always been involved and engaged with High Point University ever since we graduated. And I said we because my wife went to school here also. So that helped that I had a chance to meet my wife, who became the first African-American homecoming queen, Miss High Point. and she was a cheerleader here. So it's been a love affair with this city and with this community and with the University of High Point.
Wow.
All right.
And,
so,
and
so Tubby,
go ahead, Mike.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, so Tubby, let's go back to your high school days. 66, there's a big basketball game going on between a school that you will later be associated with, Kentucky versus what became Texas El Paso.
Texas Western.
Right.
UTEP, yeah.
Right. So when you see that as a high schooler, and then fast forward to 98 when you win a championship for that very school with all the history and somewhat racism that was going on with Kentucky, what went through your mind when you hoisted that trophy knowing the history of Kentucky?
You know, you have to go back to 66 when integration was taking place around the country, but especially in Maryland. You know, integration took place about 64, 65, but we were – you know, schools were consolidated, and I went from an all-black school, George Washington Carver in Lexington Park, Maryland, you know, first through 12th grade, all-black. And then you go to then they bus you to Great Mills High School. But that spring of 1966, I witnessed probably my first college basketball game I ever watched on TV. It was in black and white, and it was a Saturday afternoon in March. Early April, I don't know the exact dates, but I remember we had rabbit ears and we had an antenna outside the window, and we took turns using a pair of vice grips to get the picture, and so I see an all black starting five team from Texas Western. You know, I didn't know much about college basketball at the time. I'm watching the first college basketball game on TV, And they're playing against Kentucky. And, you know, at that age, I was going from the ninth grade to the 10th grade. I didn't know I was going. But I knew that was a watershed moment for me because I identified with that. And I said, you know what? And the year before, in the ninth grade, Cecil Short, who was my first high school coach, talked my dad into letting me come out for the basketball team. And I made the basketball team, play JV for half the year, and he moved me up to varsity. So now, you know, as a young person, you start to say, hey, I can do that. I can play basketball. At not only in college, because no one in my family, no one I knew of that had gone on to get an athletic scholarship. I didn't know anybody that had done it. My brothers and sisters had gone off to college at Bowie State and Maryland Eastern Shore, and I knew I was going to teach. At that point, I knew that, and then I thought, I can play basketball. I'm a good athlete. Cecil Short told me that, and I've been competitive. So now you're being bused from George Washington Carver over to Great Mills High School. Now it's a similar – so now it's an all-white school, and so it prepared me for the high points and to be a leader at major colleges and be able to coach, because at that point, and I tell young people today, the sooner you can decide what you want to do with your life and which direction you want to go, and now you're going to do everything, all the classes you're going to take, you're going to associate yourself with, if it's sports, or if you want to get in the medical field or the business field or whatever field you're going to go into, you're going to gravitate towards that. I never forget the librarian at Great Mills High School. I used to go in the library. She gave me a book on Jackie Robinson. And then I started reading the Sports Illustrated about all the great athletes, African-American athletes. So now you start to identify with people. And so lo and behold, I go to Great Mills High School, and I'm a pretty good athlete there, play football, play basketball, run track. I mean, I just got involved with sports. And I didn't care what it was. If it was running cross country, I ran cross country. If they asked me, I played baseball. I pitched baseball. So I did all that to try to stay off the farm, number one.
Yeah.
But that kind of, you asked me, and that all helps you shape who you're going to become and what you're going to become later on in life. So I'm a believer in character, and you've got to have, and I was blessed again to be raised in a household with a mom and dad that taught us those values and made us go to Sunday school, singing the, and so those are, that was such a galvanizing moment. And you, and the fast forward, now I'm the head coach at the University of Kentucky, after having served, moved my family quite a bit before that. But when you have a goal and you have a dream, you know, you'll do everything in your power to, and the dream, it works, you know, if you just stay focused and keep those goals in front of you, you can achieve just about anything.
You're listening to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio show with your hosts, Michael Robinson and Ricky Hampton. We are joined by the great Tubby Smith, just one of the great college coaches that we have seen over the years. Tubby, you went to Tulsa. You put Tulsa on the map, had a great run there. And then you leave Tulsa and you head to Georgia in 1995. Mm-hmm. You know, I covered, when I worked in Nashville, I covered Wade Houston when he broke the color barrier at the University of Tennessee. And, actually, as a kid, my family was great friends with the Perry Wallace family when Perry became the first black basketball player in the SEC. And I remember all the things Perry went through in 1966 when he – yeah, I think it was 66, 67. And then I'm covering Wade, and I'm hearing stuff in the stands regarding race about Wade Houston in 1988. And I'm hearing it in Starkville, Mississippi, Mississippi State, and I'm hearing people in the stands yelling nigger, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, y'all got niggers? I mean, you have black people on your own team. And I say all that, Coach, because you go to the University of Georgia, and even though it's 1995, I don't have to tell our listeners the state of racial relations in America today. And I can see now how you handle Georgia and Kentucky and all these other spots now that I know more about your background.
Well, again, That prepared me. You asked me what helped prepare me. All those relationships, all those experiences. You know, even going to Great Mills High School, where it was, where you're on a committee to help make that transition smooth. From and so I was kind of thrust in a leadership role because they asked, black students, especially the athletes that were part of the teams, to be in a position to help the transition, because there was an edge there. You know, you imagine now you go from an all-black school to an all-white school, George Washington College, Great Mills High School. But that, you're right. But again, going back to Tulsa, I stand on the shoulders of some of the great coaches like Nolan Richardson, who took Tulsa to the NIT, won the NIT championship. But, you know, even before that, John McClendon, who was one, I guess he was the first coach to win national championships at Tennessee State.
Yes.
When he won back-to-back NAIA championships.
Hey, Coach, and that's Mike's alma mater, so you don't have to.
Yeah, that's my alma mater.
Is that Mike? But I got to meet people like that, and I got to meet guys that the coaches that were, and John Thompson at Georgetown, winning the first black coach to win an NCAA Division I championship. Then Nolan Richardson won one. Then we won one. And then Kevin Ollie. So there's been four of us that have won national championships. But before that, as I said before, there were a lot of coaches that came before us. And I just mentioned Big House Gaines, who's right down the street at Winston-Salem State, who won a national championship with the great Earl the Pearl Monroe. So I've been so blessed. And I got to tell you, in this region and in this state in North Carolina, there's been a lot of historically black institutions that have developed some great players and great coaches from North Carolina Central, Winston-Salem State, North Carolina A&T, with Cal Irving. I had a chance to meet and learn from these great leaders and coaches and men at these different institutions. So I was blessed. Ben Jove, who became a great friend of mine at Southern University, who coached. So, but you mentioned Tulsa. That was a great experience. My first head coaching job in college basketball after spending 18 years, 6 years as a high school coach. And this, I think people have to understand, it just doesn't happen overnight. And a lot of when I speak at clinics or the young coaches, I say, well, look, coach, how did you get to be the head coach at Kentucky? I said, well, look, do you have 18 years to prepare? They go, excuse me? I said, well, son, it took me 6 years as a high school coach. And when you talk about the great players and great coaches that come out of Detroit, like Perry Watson, you know, and I can name a lot of you. And I remember going to Detroit when I first got into college coaching at VCU in 1978-79. You've got one of the great coaches of all time right there in your city in Dwayne Casey. You know, I knew Dwayne Casey in 1979. And what a great job he did for the Detroit Pistons with the Toronto Raptors. So there are a lot of people that have that I've learned from over the years and watched. And that's not to say that because I was coached in college, I had three coaches, Bob Vaughn, you know, white coach, Jewish coach, who was here at High Point University when I first came here. I played for J.D. Barnett, who was one of the great coaches at VCU and La Tech and other places, and at Tulsa. I actually replaced him at Tulsa. He coached me my junior year. And then we have other coaches that we've had here, Jerry Steele, who's NAIA Hall of Famer. So I've been blessed to be around some outstanding coaches and people.
Hey, Coach, our phone lines are just packed. We got a lot of people who'd like to say hello to you and ask you a couple of questions. Let's go right to New York City, last four digits, 5510. Hold on, New York. I'm going to get you here. You're on with Coach Tubby Smith.
Good evening, Coach Tubby Smith. This is Michael Mosley of Brooklyn, New York, by way of New Bern, North Carolina. You may know my late godfather, Walt Bellamy, of course. How you doing?
Wow.
Yes.
That's great. I appreciate the opportunity to listen to all the facts and hear the ledger, and I'll make it short because I think it's very exciting that you had done some historical things. At this present state, I've created a nonprofit organization called New Dawn Academia Athletics, Inc. in New York for the past 10 years, but I've been in the underground. And Brother Duffy McDuffie out of Lawnburg had just summoned me just most recently. So we're looking about doing a pack, and I like everything that I hear, specifically about the SEC and the various other things that you have, you know, challenged yourself through. I also had many of challenges in my life, but I share this one thing for a fact. God is the healer and the knower of all things, of all those things that needs to come to light. And you have come to light and shared a lot of things, and the show has showed that it's a powerful impact into a community that is desperately in need for information and servitude to a community, not just on the athletic, but from the academia standpoints too. So I hope that after tonight we can all merge together once I sit down with Brother McDuffie down in Lawnburg, which of course we all know faithfully as Bishop Frank. So I'd be more than happy to share with him the news first thing tomorrow morning. And I would like to cut it short because I know a lot of listeners out there have a lot of questions to share and ask of you. And it's just a pleasure. And I thank you, particularly Ricky Hampton and Michael Rogers. I appreciate the time that y'all gave me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bishop McDuffie and Lawrenberg Institute, you know, the great Charlie Scott was like the first black player to play at the University of North Carolina, came through there. And I've had a number of players from New York that I've recruited. Fred Brown, who's going to be doing a thing. He's going to be conducting a basketball tournament there, I think at Rucker Park there in New York. I've had my first recruit when I got to Tulsa, Mark Morris, played for me at Tulsa. He was a junior college transfer, and so I have had a lot of players that we've recruited over the years from New York as well. Great to hear from you. I hope we can partner in the future. Okay,
Coach, we're going to go to area code 240, last four digits 9522. You're on with Tubby Smith. Are you there?
Hello.
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 You're
can
on
you
the
hear me?
AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio show with Tubby Smith.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. You're on the
Tubby?
Air.
Yes.
Tubby, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
You know who this is? This guy knows you better than any other person in the world.
Steve.
That's right, buddy.
Okay. Boy, hey, don't let him talk, okay? Hey, don't let
I'm
him
not.
Talk. Hey, Steve Hawkins and I were in every class. Steve, we were in every class, first to 12th grade, maybe?
All the way to the 12th.
All the way to the 12th grade. Then he went. Steve was a lot smarter than I was. He went to Oregon State. He went into business.
Oh, my
goodness. All I could do was be a physical education teacher. No, but
come on, man.
Hey, this is my brother from Scotland, Maryland. He grew up right there. Hey, Steve can tell you about us playing in the woods. We had a goal at my house, and we had a basketball goal. I think we had a bicycle rim.
That's right.
At your
That's
house,
correct.
Right, Steve?
That's right. That's right.
We'd be playing on the mud, in the mud.
That's right. Pole vaulting with the stick.
Oh, yeah.
Steve, I guess since you know Coach Smith so well, are you surprised at the great success he's had throughout his coaching career? Could you see this coming?
Yes. So, when Tubby and I were growing up, Tubby didn't tell you that most of his fellow teammates on the team with we talk about basketball, football, just like he said, track, cross country, softball, hardball. I mean, you name it, we played it. But a lot of the guys were very competitive, and Tubby was the most competitive one of the group. So there's nothing that you would do that Tubby wouldn't want to beat you in. But the good thing about it is Tubby is the thing that we got from Tubby, as growing up, is that Tubby was very honest. He had good integrity. He was a caring person. I mean, we used to – I don't think – did we ever fight, Tubby?
No, but we had some heated battles, boy.
We had battles, but we never really got angry with each other where we displaced. I mean, Tubby was a true competitor. So I knew that Tubby would be successful. There is no question. All of us. And matter of fact, all of us are successful in our own way. But Tubby was really a great surprise to us because, he just did that other edge, And, we really cherish him from this area. And we always, matter of fact, we talked this morning, didn't we, Tubby?
Yeah. And you didn't tell me.
So,
but you used to be.
Well, actually, Rick dialed me in.
Okay, good.
I set you up, Coach.
Oh, good for you. I'm glad you got someone that I can, hey, we had some things going on in our lives. But Steve
That's right.
is the same way. Steve is the most caring, and I've always looked up to Steve because even though he's a little bit older than I am, he's younger than I am. But he was very analytical. Steve has always been very analytical about things and very wise. and he kept me out of a lot of scrapes. I can tell you that right now, especially on the basketball court too, and in sports, you know, because I was, you know, I was competitive to the point that I wasn't going to be, you know, because I didn't necessarily fight, but I would fight if I, you know, because I would get to that point.
Right. Right.
That's correct.
Well, yeah. Steve, man, I surely appreciate you calling in and sharing with Tubby with us. And Coach, we got a text here, and you can text us at 616-325-7315. Coach, I've always been a fan of yours, and I've always admired how you conducted yourself on the court and how your players and you ran your program with so much class. That's from a text from Lansing, Michigan. So that might be a Michigan State fan saying good things about you, Coach.
Well, I appreciate that. We've had some battles with both the Michigan State and Michigan. Tom Izzo is a good friend of mine, and certainly now that they have Howard there at the that's running the Michigan program. But John Beilein and I have been friends over the years, and I don't think there's many schools or many coaches that I haven't had some type of contact with over in my course of my 40 plus years of coaching and teaching.
Wow. Mike, you got something for Coach?
Yeah. Back to, we got into the first. So back in the 80s, of course, John Thompson's first NCAA championship for an African-American coach. But he also went through a lot of ridicule that, you know, why didn't you win four straight with Patrick Ewing? But then he got the honor bestowed on him to be the first African-American coach of the Olympic team. And unfortunately, that one lost. So you as a coach, and of course as an African-American coach, how did that affect you seeing that moment right there happen under the mm-hmm. watch of a pioneering coach? And then, of course, yeah. Lenny Wilkins won in 96. And you were an assistant coach on a winning team too. So
yeah.
how did that culminate in your life?
Well, you know, in sports, we understand you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. And if I remember correctly, the international teams, you know, were really developing. You know, we sort of exported basketball internationally, and it, those teams internationally. And whenever I can tell you, when you're representing the USA
mm-hmm.
and you're an Olympian, it's not like you're coaching, you're leading Kentucky or Minnesota or High Point, or you're leading, you're representing the USA.
Right.
And there's nobody that the world wants to beat more than they want to beat USA, especially USA basketball, because
right.
we're so dominating. I don't think we had lost. I guess we lost back in 72.
Right.
You know, when the Russians upset us, when Henry Abbott was the coach there, and I remember watching that game. It was just stolen from us. But now,
right.
you fast forward to, and there was a transitional period where our student athletes, we had amateurs playing against professionals, and that's, if you remember that, that's what happened at that time. And so then, right after that, we allowed professional players to start, you know, to play on the Olympic team. You know, we had some great players, Michael Jordan, I guess, when, what was that with, Coach
Dream
Knight?
Team.
The Dream Team. But, you know, he played on it. But, you know, he played also, he played for Coach Knight when they won the Olympics, I think. But
yeah, 84.
You were getting some great players, and the basketball was improving, and that's so. I never looked at the loss by John Thompson as something that was, you know, bad. You understand what I mean? I never.
Yeah.
I was just so. It was such an honor and a privilege that he was representing us and representing this country, because there's no pressure like Olympic pressure. I'm just telling you, in competition. And so when I see these Olympics.
You mentioned the 72 Olympic Games, and our friend Mike Bantam has been a guest on our show. Whenever he's on, you mention that 72 Olympics. I mean, he gets hot all over again. And you know, Coach, they never accepted those rings. And I can't say on the air what Mike said they can do with them. So,
yeah,
they never accepted the silver medal because they got robbed in that game.
Yeah,
sure. Coach, you talked about pressure of the Olympics. You know, college basketball is a lot of pressure now. You know, it's high stakes. Kids are scrutinized like NBA players, not in basketball and football for sure. What do you think about the state of the student athlete in collegiate sports today? And what do you think about them being compensated? How do we handle that, considering the big business college athletics have become?
Well, it's a double-edged sword when you talk about paying athletes. You know, I was blessed, I was very grateful that I had the opportunity to get my education paid for, and not many people have that opportunity. When I came to High Point University, I felt like that was compensation, a lot of compensation, and it helped me become a successful person and earn a good living, and get in good employment, be able to communicate better with people because I had an education. It's just turned upside down because of the money, you know, that's available, that's through media. And that's pretty much where it comes from, because not many sports are making money on college campuses today other than football, football and men's basketball. And so we know, and I don't think people understand that the NCAA, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, which governs all collegiate sports, Division I, II, and III, and every sport that competes for a championship is really paid for by the Final Four. You hear what I'm saying? Every Division I, II, and III sport, whether it's women's volleyball, men's lacrosse, baseball, it comes from the billion-dollar contract that the Final Four and college basketball has. To put it in perspective, there are 353 Division I schools playing basketball, and the proliferation of college sports and the notoriety that comes with. I mean, you see the contracts, the money that professional athletes are making. But if you're good enough and you do the right things, you develop, and you are fortunate enough to be able to be a professional athlete, then you can make a lot of money. Now, I'm in agreement with you that I think players should be compensated. For instance, right now, our players get cost of attendance, which is something that only transpired the last 5 years, 4 or 5 years. Before, they were just getting a Pell Grant, and some student athletes, if your parents were military, they would get compensated. But now players can receive the Pell Grant, which is up to about, I think, $7,500 a year, or $5,000 to $7,500 a year, on top of the scholarship. Then they can get the cost of attendance, which when we were at Memphis was $5,000. Here at High Point is about $3,000. You see me? So a kid can get – he's getting his education paid for free. And he won't have to come out of his pocket for a penny once he graduates. He's debt free. So now, if a young man here gets, he can receive his Pell Grant. If it's $5,000, now you add in $3,000. That's $8,000 he's getting. You understand? So I think, but I also think if we put something in like a estate plan, a plan for him later on,
when they finish college to give them a head start. I think that's where we would, if we could put something away, because if you give it to them now, there's no telling what they're going to do with it. Because you've got to educate them on how to handle money. I know growing up, my parents taught me, my dad taught me that, listen, the value of a dollar or making money. Because his whole thing, son, if you can't learn to live on $50 a month, son, you're never going to learn to live on $500 a month. If a man can't live on $500 a month, he doesn't learn to live on. He's never going to learn to live on $5,000 a month. So it's how you invest your money and what you do with it. You'll run out and get a bunch of tattoos and get holes in your ears and all this stuff. Or are you going to put it away so you can have something later on? So I think that there should be some form of compensation. I'm just pointing out that there is compensation now.
Yeah.
For most Power Five or Division One programs that give scholarships for basketball. So I think that may put it in perspective some for some of our listeners and for everyone that's listening right now. And I think if you can put something in escrow for players later on, I think that would be beneficial.
So, Coach, my question to that, add on to that would be, what if you are like a superstar player like Zion we just had that could sell jerseys and could sell shoes? So what if you have your likeness and your jersey and all that is being sold and you get nothing from that? What about that aspect of somebody that's at that plateau where they could generate all kind of money, from just their
likeness? That happens on any level, at every profession.
Right.
I mean, if you're a professor,
right,
your research is probably owned, just like me, as a coach. Everything that you make at your university, it goes into one pot. And so you have to, if you have outside income, it has to be reported. You understand what I mean? I mean, even in your line of work, you're going to pay taxes on it. Your university is probably going to own the rights to it, because that's just part of it. Once you become a head coach at any major college nowadays, you're signing over all of your rights, your image to that university.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying? Well, it was a time when you could get separate deals with a shoe deal, or you could get a deal with a Xerox or MITRE, or you can't do that now because the university saw the money that coaches were making, and so now if a student athlete wants to do that, and they're gonna have a separate, what do you call it, a self-contract or a service contract with the university. But because that university is paying for your education, I mean, there's a whole lot of legal, you understand, ramifications to paying somebody. I know, later on, I remember we were able to give managers a scholarship. Now most schools can't do that because now you have to pay them a salary, and they have a workman compensation thing, and now they have to be reported to the, to the IRS. And so it's a lot of things involved, and now can you fire them? Hey, you want to get paid? Do you mind being fired? Hey, son, you don't play. You didn't rebound like you should tonight.
Right.
You didn't box out. I'm going to dock your pay. If you don't perform.
Right. I hear you, Tubby. Let's go back to our phones here. Area code 202-8606. You're on the African-American Athlete with Tubby Smith.
Yes, good evening. This is Coach Butch McAdams. How are you?
Great. How you doing? Great.
We got a couple of legends on here now. Tubby Smith. How you doing tonight, Coach?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, man. It's such an honor to be on just to speak with Coach Smith. Coach Smith, Congratulations on the great work that you've done and the great work that you continue to do, not just with basketball, but just developing young men. And I've always admired your work. And also, Rick, Coach Smith is not too far from the D.C. area. You know, we'll consider him a DMV guy.
I am a DMV guy.
Coach, talk a little bit about
how things in the DMV. I'm gonna be up there in next week, I think.
Oh, great! Things are awesome here, Coach. We've got some really still continue to have some really really great basketball. The public schools in D.C. proper aren't as strong as they used to be, but the Catholic schools and the county schools are producing big-time players. Coach, talk to us a little bit about, you know, you were an outstanding basketball player in your own right playing in high school. Who were some of the players, if you could recall, back in high school that you competed against?
Well, you know, I remember some of the Savoy boys over in Charles County. Dacher, Steve Dacher. And then over in Calvert County, you had Coach Bruce McGlynn, had a great team over there. And we could never get past Gwynn Park. We had Sonny Proctor.
Sonny Proctor.
Yeah, and then over in Gaithersburg, they had Branch. What was the guard, the kid that was so good over at Gaithersburg? We couldn't get past Central. We couldn't get back. You know, we would come from down in the country, Great Mills High School. I was a high school coach at Great Mills also after I graduated from there.
Absolutely. I know that down in Lexington Park, correct?
Lexington Park, yeah. Great Mills High School.
Oh, yeah.
So we were in that SMAC, the St. Mary's Athletic Conference, and we played against Choptacon. Now you got Leonardtown. Wasn't there when I was there, but when I played ball, you had Calvert County. I played against them in high school. We played against Pamunkey, Lackey, La Plata. Thomas Stone was new. We go over to Calvert County. But even before that, all black schools were Brooks and Pamunkey. And but you bring up an interesting fact about the players. We have three players on our team here at High Point University from the Maryland area. So we've been very fortunate because guys like myself, Gene Littles, who was a great player out of D.C.
Oh, my goodness. Genie Littles was a legendary player out of McKinley Tech High School. Boy, he could flat-out play.
I'm going to see him. I'm going to be in Phoenix next, and he's not doing well right now.
Absolutely.
And Joe Colbert played here. They all played here at High Point. That's one of the reasons I came to High Point. A guy by the name of Mort Lippman used to run a paint store down on 14th and U.
That's right.
And he had gone to High Point years ago, and he was sending players from the D.C., Maryland area to High Point, North Carolina. And
Coach, it's ironic. I grew up. And you and I are around the same age. We're both 35 years old. and I grew up on 14th and U. And so I often talk about the great history of D.C. and 14th Street and just the great student-athletes. One last quick question. You coached a D.C. area guy who I thought had a really great career and just did a solid job and sticking to his role, and that was Keith Bogans.
Oh, one of the all-time best.
Okay.
What a big young man, still family. I still stay in touch with Keith. You know, he finished up with the Orlando Magic. He's but what a job he did for us at Kentucky. But I got to know Morgan Wooten because I used to work at Keith.
Great man.
Oh, yeah, at DeMatha. Had great players and great teams there. But I used to work for Morgan Wooten's uncle down in Scotland, Maryland. He ran Camp Brown down in southern Maryland. And the D.C. Department of Recreation used to have a camp down there also. That was my summer job. And so I got, now years later, I'm recruiting a player like Keith Bogans from, you know, they had that same team. They had Joe Forte, who went on to play at North Carolina.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know, us landing on that team at that same year, we brought in Tayshaun Prince. We had a heck of a – and Keith Bogans, you know, helped us win 28 games. We got beat. Who was it up? Dwayne Wade beat us in the Elite Eight.
Mm-hmm. I remember that. Yeah.
And, but, and you know what? If Keith Bogans was healthy, Keith Bogans had a bad ankle. He turned his ankle against Wisconsin in the NCAA tournament, and we had no one that could really guard Dwayne Wade.
Well, Coach, we were all proud of you here in the DMV. We still are, and you know, we love our basketball here.
I know you know Lou Wilson, right?
Oh, absolutely. I was just with Lou Wilson. Lou was a former coach at he was at Largo, and then from Largo to Riverdale Baptist, and now currently he's at Wise.
Yeah, that's my guy. Go
yeah, my guy too. Lou's a great guy, and I'm gonna throw one last name at you. Legendary DC guy, God rest his soul. He was Rick. He was the Muhammad Ali of sports before Ali, and that is the great Will Jones.
Oh, Will, man, yeah. He's a legend. He was a legend, and one of the all-time greats.
Mm-hmm. Well, Coach Rick and I are good friends. He's going to hopefully connect the two of us. And, man, I'll be honored to have you on my radio show that I do here in the DMV. That would be a treat for our listeners.
I'd love to be there. I'd love to do it. Just let me know. And I'll be happy to join you.
I'll get you two together. I'll get you guys together.
Okay. Expect a call from me before the end of the week. Thank you. Rick, keep up the great work, man. And, hey, I'll tell you now, my burgundy and gold is 6-10.
6-10.
Six and ten. So I don't want to hear
any. She's talking like that, man. Hey, Coach, tell us.
I don't want to hear any.
Tell our listeners how they can listen to you and catch you.
Yes.
Catch your show.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you. You can listen to my show, which Rick Hampton, Brother Hampton, is a regular contributor to the show, In and Out of Sports. You can get us on WOLDCnews.com. That's WOLDCnews.com, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. And, you know, we have the legends on. Coach, last week you speak at the Mather, we had Gerard Mustafa on.
Oh,
wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, And Rick hooked me up with the great Oscar Robertson, Ray Scott, Coach Thompson, Lefty Giselle, Morgan Wooten, Lou Wilson, all of them. So yeah,
I'd love to join you. I look forward to it.
Thank you. God bless
Coach,
everybody.
Coach,
thank you so much.
Coach, man, we want to thank you for spending so much time with us tonight. I do have a couple more questions. I'm gonna let you get out of
sure.
here. You mentioned Tayshaun Smith. I mean, Tayshaun Prince, who is beloved here in Detroit. And, Coach, I covered that team. I covered that team. You know, Tay set most of his rookie year. They were a really good team.
41 games. He didn't play in 41 games.
Yeah. Yeah, Rick Carlisle said it, and they got in trouble. They couldn't guard Tracy McGrady, and they sicked Tayshaun on him, and the rest is history. But, Coach, I told you I covered him. Even as a rookie, when you would talk to him, he sounded like he had been in the league for 10 years. Nothing fazed that kid.
The most mature, one of the most mature young men I've ever coached. And one of the things, you know, he had to try out for 19 different teams before he was drafted. And Larry Brown, when he went there, Larry was with us on the Olympic team in 2000. The great Larry Brown, who took over, went on to win the national championship.
Yeah.
You know, Chauncey Billups. And he was on my team. We won a gold medal in the Junior Olympics. So, my son, Saul Smith, wears number 11. That's what he wore because of the great Isaiah Thomas. So,
wow.
We have and I had a chance to sit with Dave Bing just 2 weeks ago out at the NBA Summer League. and had the chance to sit and spend time with Dwayne Casey and Dave Bings. But you're right, Tayshaun Prince, coming out of Compton, California, Dominguez High School, was somebody asked me one time, said, "Coach, did you when he blocked? Remember he didn't give up on that play.
Reggie Miller was going for Reggie Miller."
And somebody interviewed me, said, "Coach, did you, you know, that defense, his ability to play?" I said, "Tayshaun was one of the all-time leading shot blockers in the history of Kentucky basketball." Yeah, that's he just doesn't give up on plays. And that's what we try to teach our players. And that's one of the things that I'm really proud of, guys like Keith Bogans, Tayshaun Prince, Jody Meeks, the young man who just won a gold on that NBA championship with the Toronto Raptors. And you saw behind the bench there, Jamal McGlure, who played for me at Kentucky.
Yeah.
So we have quite a few people that we had the good fortune and that we're blessed to coach.
Coach, we just got a text from our good friend, the AVA and NBA legend, the great Matt Calvin, just congratulating you on your fantastic career. In high regards to the great Tubby Smith, and he will elevate High Point basketball to another level. That's from Matt Calvin, the great AVA and NBA point guard.
Oh, I had a chance to watch him play when Greensboro, the Carolina Cougars were here when and Matt Calvin was a great player. I love watching him play.
Well, that's all right.
So, Coach, my question would be this: you did a lot of time in the SEC, of course, that's a football conference, and then you also had a little time in the Big Ten with Minnesota. So, what was it like in both of those power conferences, and what was recruiting like?
And I was also in the Big 12.
The Big 12.
But it was at Texas Tech. So what was it like? Competitive as can be, man. You got to get it done there. And I was fortunate to be at a place like Georgia where we were able to have 20 win seasons back to back for the first time in the history of school and go to two NCAA tournaments and went to the Sweet 16 and got up. You know, we got beat by a last second shot against Syracuse, or we could have made it to the Elite Eight and to the Final Four. But the conference, you know, you're going to get great athletes at those schools in the Big Ten, at Minnesota, and you're competing against the best, and in the SEC or in the Big 12, where you have teams like Kansas that are perennial champions there year in and year out. And you go to the Big Ten, you know, you got Michigan State and Michigan, Ohio State, and Wisconsin, Purdue. It's just, and in the SEC, you look down, you got just such a great tradition. You know, the Florida became great. You know, Tennessee has had great teams. Now Auburn went to those. You have to be on top of your game, but recruiting is important. You can't win without good players, and I know that. Again, it's tough though, and there's been some great coaches in this league.
Yeah. Hey, Coach. This is the last question. We're gonna let you go. You have been just fantastic tonight, and I know our listening audience all across the country appreciates it. What would be your? My son's a young basketball coach on a Division III level, and he wants to do what you're doing at a level. And you talked about how you started as a high school coach, just like he did. What would you tell a young coach going into today's game? Because I know how tough it is. You had the situation at Memphis, and it didn't go well for you. But I really respect how you handled that whole situation with class. There are going to be ups and downs in this profession. What could you talk to a young coach about?
I always tell them about patience, you know, building of the proper culture and building your brand. You know, I think I had a coach, Frank McGuire, the great Frank McGuire at South Carolina when I was assistant coach there with George Felton. I asked him, I said, when I become a head coach at the Division I level, when I get a head coaching job, what are the things I need to know? What do I need to do? He said, number one, image. So perception. So when you're out, you don't, you never know who's watching, and you don't get a second chance to make a first impression. So wherever you are, you know, make the big time where you are. You know, you got to do it. You got, if you're a high school coach, you got to be the best high school coach possible. You got to treat those kids with respect. You got to do all the things that, and that's developing in your image about who you are and what, and because that's going to sustain you, and that's going to get you that next job or that next opportunity. So image, and because that's a perception, how people view you. You want to be a coach that, you know, there's certain guys, you know, you look at a John Chaney, you know, he's, you know, he's got his necktie all loose, and he's, you know, he's disheveled, you know. Nolan Richardson, he had his boots on, he had an image about him, he was intimidating. John Thompson had the towel over his shoulder, you know, and he was, and for me, I just said, well, you know, what kind of image do I want to be? And I kind of grew up watching, being in North Carolina, watching a Dean Smith and then Frank McGuire talking about how he dressed. You know, he was always dressed to a T, and so was Dean Smith. He had, when you saw him on a plane, he was wearing slacks and nice polished shine shoes, and he had a coat on. And that's what I do. So now you got to have an image. So next thing is philosophy. You know, you have to have a system that you know that you can teach, that you can sell to your fans, sell to the players. So I'm telling you what a young coach needs to do in this day and time, because you got to be able to sell it to that, the administration. When you go in there to interview for that job, you got to be able to know your system inside and out, so you can communicate it to everyone, to fans, administration, players, your coaching staff. You have to be yourself. You know, you can take from, you can pull from a lot of different coaches, but you can't be Mike Krzyzewski, you can't be Roy Williams, you can't be Tubby Smith. You got to be who you are. So learn the game. And then the other thing is, one of the other things he talked about was just scheduling. You know, that's one of the things. As Frank McGuire said, when you get to be a head coach, son, make sure you're in charge of your schedule. So, but young coaches today, you say your nephew, you'd have to – networking. I think networking, reaching out, going to as many clinics as you can. And converse with others. Okay?
Yeah. Hey, coach, one more thing before we go. Larry Finch, I had the pleasure of covering him when he was at Memphis. He is – I think we kind of forget about his place and his role as a black coach. He may have been the first black coach at a major university in the Mid-South in the early 80s.
Yeah, he's right. At Memphis, he took over for Dana Kirk and did a fantastic job. We had the good fortune to know Larry and coach against him. I was assistant coach at the University of South Carolina when we played Memphis. And ended up one of the last games he coached, we played him out in the Rainbow Classic in Hawaii. That was his last year. And we beat him out there. And my son Gigi was playing for me at the time. It was a heck of a tournament. But I have utmost respect. You know, the practice facility is a Larry Finch. Their first practice was a Larry Finch practice center at Memphis. They have a new one now, but he's well-respected around, especially in the Tennessee, the Memphis area.
Yeah,
he was an all-time great
player.
He was on that team that went to the Final Four and lost to UCLA in the championship game.
73. 1973.
Yeah.
That's when Bill Walton
Ricky,
went off.
Yeah, Ricky, let me get this last thing in, and that'll close it out.
Go ahead. I got all night.
We're going to let you go.
Okay, it's a two-parter. So it would have to be, I'm assuming, your proudest moment to win that national championship with your son on the team. But would that situation with the motorcycle be your most embarrassing moment?
You had to bring that up. You know what? You know, I rode in on a motorcycle at Minnesota year before, 2 years before that. But I was wearing, they wanted me to come in like John Shaft. You know, I was in a leather jacket. What are you talking about? He's a bad mother, you know. But And my wife Donna told me, said, "Don't you be out there trying to show off." And I know how to ride a motorcycle, but it slipped. And when I jumped up, you know, the motto there is "Wreck 'em Tex," right? I said, "It's Wreck 'em Tex." They didn't mean wreck the bike, though, Coach. But you know, that was.
Tubby, man, you have given us so much time tonight. We want to thank you so much, and we
appreciate
wish you all the best at High Point. I agree with Coach, with Matt Calvin. You're going to do some great things down there. And man, we are so proud of what you have done, not only in the on the court and in terms of building young men to go off and be successful citizens of our community. Thank you so much,
Absolutely.
Coach.
Well, we appreciate this opportunity.
Absolutely.
Anytime. Thank you. God bless
you. Thank you. Yep.
All right, everybody. You've been listening to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. This is Ricky Hampton, Michael Robinson, saying good night and God bless.
Yeah. How you feel, fellas? Yeah. You're getting down.